Welcome to the Security Sessions podcast, brought to you by Thales and hosted by me, Nera Jones. In this podcast series, we'll be discussing the technologies, people, and processes behind information security and delving into topics like data security, remote access, and digital transformation. We'll be speaking to Thales and industry experts to bring you fresh perspectives on how to navigate the world of cloud security. Today's episode will be about ransomware, to pay or not to pay. Over the past few years, there has been an increasing number of ransomware attacks, often targeted to its critical infrastructure, with the potential to create a national emergency anywhere in the world. Indeed, on 12th of May 2022, Costa Rica declared national emergency amid Conti ransomware attacks. In this episode, we explore the typical style of ransomware attacks and how they have evolved, look at who is carrying them out, and discuss some best practice strategies. It is my pleasure today to welcome two fantastic guests, Bob Burns, Chief Product Security Officer at Thales, and Paul Chichester, Director of Operations at the UK National Cybersecurity Centre. Bob and Paul, a very warm welcome to you. And can you please say a few words before we start the questions, starting with you, Bob?
Yeah, certainly. First off, thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here and discuss such a timely topic. It's obviously front of mind, both in the press and in our businesses today, both for ourselves as well as our customers. So I think it's a good important topic, and I'm glad to be here with Paul to review our collective notes and experiences and hopefully share with the audience some best practices.
I very much look forward to that. And you, Paul?
Well, thank you. Yes, and just to echo Bob's comments there, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come along and talk to you about this really important topic today. I think from the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre's perspective, this is certainly right up there at the top, if not the top, of the threats that we are concerned about for the UK. And we talk a lot about state threats, but fundamentally, the thing that will affect the majority of people in the UK, be it citizens or business or government, is the criminal, cyber criminal, and particularly at the moment, ransomware threat. It's a threat that is prevalent and relevant to anybody across the UK or the world, really, as somebody who might fall a victim to it. So I think for us, it's really important to have a chance to talk to people about making them aware of that threat, but also talking through, hopefully, some of the things that people can usefully do to counter that threat and defend themselves from it. So really looking forward to having that conversation today.
Thank you, Paul. And indeed, 1 year on from the high-profile Colonial Pipeline attack, what does the current ransomware landscape look like as far as you see it, Paul?
So I think, I mean, we find ourselves in quite an interesting moment because I think certainly following on from the attacks last year and through last year, we certainly were seeing a significant increase in ransomware. I think many people have reported that uptick. We were seeing more high-profile attacks. We were seeing higher payments. We were seeing a diversification, I think, in the modus operandi of the adversary. So, not just extortion from the ransomware perspective, but also the follow-on kind of extortion through the threat of leaking data. And so what some are calling double extortion, and actually increasingly sort of seeing that just becoming the latter part. So actually just extorting organizations with the threat of leaking information, not even necessarily encrypting the information in the first place. So I think, it's a really dynamic landscape, one that continues to change, perhaps unsurprisingly, given that criminals are renowned for being sort of adept at changing their tactics very rapidly and making our life as defenders really hard. So I think that's sort of, have been the story of the last 12 months. And I think at the moment, actually, starting to really wonder, is since the Ukraine crisis, a slight drop off, dare I say, of some of the attacks. Now, again, can think about why that may be, but it's certainly, I think, a space that we continue to need to be very vigilant on, and just to see how that threat changes in the months to come.
Absolutely. And you, Bob, what is your perspective?
I agree with a lot of Paul's commentary and direction. I think as someone who was in the Southeast U.S. and directly impacted by that particular attack against the Colonial Pipeline, for me, from my perspective, I see it really as a pivot point in the publication and publicity surrounding the threats of ransomware. Clearly, for what I've seen or what I experienced in the U.S. is that the, you know, ransomware attacks were prevalent prior to this. However, they went largely unreported. But the Colonial Pipeline event really pivoted a lot of different resources and attention towards this, especially at the U.S. government level. I know recently we've seen the White House executive security order come out regarding this, attempting to improve the government interaction and relations to being able to prepare us for these types of attacks. And I also think we saw a change in the attacker's tactics. I think that the attention that this attack got has really resulted in probably either better vetting by the attackers, and or we've seen spin-off attacking companies spin down after a successful attack to try to lower their profile. I think ultimately also, I think this additional attention is a bit of a good thing in that it's increasing the dialogue around cyber hygiene, around what companies and people can do to try to protect themselves and lower the risks, not only to ourselves individually and personally, but also at the corporate and infrastructure level. I think we're seeing that the attacks are still increasing. So these effects of the changes and the additional attention have yet to taken into account, but I'm hopeful that this additional focus and additional resources being put into challenging this problem is going to benefit us all in the long run.
Thank you, Bob. So you just said that we're seeing an increase in ransomware attacks. So why are we observing these increases in the number and perhaps the scale of ransomware attacks? So what specifically has caused this?
Well, I'd have to speculate, not being an attacker myself, but I think there's some really clear evidence and obvious evidence is it really comes down to money. The amount of money that we're seeing being successfully extracted from companies in ransomware attacks is steadily increasing. I had recently read a report from a company called Chain Analysis, who were reporting against the cryptocurrency endpoints for a lot of these companies. And the average payments over the last 3 years have gone up fairly dramatically. In fact, any company would be happy to see a revenue increase like this, where they've gone from, in 2019, going from 88,000 average payment to 20, I'm sorry, going from average payment in 2019 of 25,000 to 88,000 in 2020 and 118,000 in 2021. So anyone can see that the fact that the profits are flowing and that it's a profitable business, it's easy to see that these attacks are attractive to many people as a revenue source.
And what's your take on it, Paul?
So I think, again, it's sort of important to sort of look at the you know, maybe some of the geographical differences in that sort of trending on the sort of the frequency or the threat itself. Because I think certainly from a very sort of parochial UK point of view, I think we've seen that number of attacks plateau from the start of this year. And again, you know, why that is, I think, is still, you know, again, very hard to sort of talk about proving sort of causality. But I do think that there are a number of areas that may be perhaps showing that we're starting to actually have an impact. So I don't think necessarily, you know, it's hard to say whether the number of attempted attacks is going down, but certainly the amount of impact that they're having, I think, is plateauing. And that, I think, is perhaps partly due to some of the things that we're doing as governments and as organizations, and I'm sure we'll touch on that in a moment. That might be, you know, that we're having some kind of deterrent effect. I think it's still hard to tell, but it might be, relating to some of the arrests that have happened, some of the global geopolitical situation that we find ourselves in. So I think it's still again, as I said, it's a very dynamic picture, and I'm certainly, not complacent from a UK perspective. And, if we were having this conversation a few months from now, we could well be seeing a significant increase again. So I think it's one of those threats that's really always hard to trend over a short period of time. But certainly in recent times, again, purely from a UK perspective, I think we're seeing a relative plateauing of that.
Wow. So you mentioned earlier on, Paul, that we had some new tactics and double extortion. So the bad actors, undeniably, in all walks of life are getting ever more sophisticated. So what type of variants, aside from double extortion techniques, are we seeing, and how can we work to essentially fight them?
Well, I think, ultimately the way that they're extorting is adapting as they find sort of different ways of, making more money or making more money more easily. I think in terms of the tactics that they're using or the technical tactics and techniques, I mean, they still continue to be, I think, ones that, we have recognized for a while. So they're relying on organizations not being suitably patched or up to date or being suitably resilient. We've seen a real increase over the last 12 months, certainly 2021, the number of, 0-day exploits that were c came into the wild, that sort of time to patch. We saw a lot of cyber criminality using those as a vector into networks. I think we are also seeing the trading of credentials for network access, be that through VPNs, services, or through RDP access into networks, and very often using the criminal marketplace to buy those credentials, to then use those to gain access to a network, to then move around and then do the ransomware. So, yes, you still have the traditional things of, vectors like spear phishing, but I think, the way that ransomware organizations ultimately have been able to gain access is quite broad and not just the sort of perhaps the traditional things that people think about. We saw, for instance, criminals using things like the Exchange vulnerability, last year, very much sort of jumping on those vulnerabilities very quickly to exploit them, and then over a longer period of time, building up those accesses to the point where they can conduct ransomware. So I think, it always comes back for me to that sort of core resilience, and recognizing that, that there's always going to be that window of opportunity for the criminal, and trying to, keep that window as short and small as possible.
Thank you for that. So now you mentioned earlier on, Paul, that obviously it depends on on geopolitical situation and also particular geographies, because the numbers are quite different, say in the UK as they are in the United States. So talking specifically about the United States, to you, Bob, so what do you think the effect will be of initiatives such as the White House executive order in terms of successfully fighting ransomware attack?
Yeah, I think I think that order is a great first step. I think in alignment with Paul's assertions, I think the government plays an important role in raising not only the visibility of this, but putting resources and energy behind initiatives to try to protect not only itself, but also private industry in the country. I think there's a lot of different prongs to it. I mean, in my estimation, I think some of the most important things that it's improving is around reporting and transparency, and more specifically about sharing information not only intra-government agency, but also with the private sector, of being able to increase the information flow about these attacks and trying to thwart and counter the potential negative publicity that might be that might go with being attacked, by creating an environment that allows transparency and creates a protective mechanism by which companies can be more transparent about any particular attacks. Because this information is extremely helpful across the board, and the more that they can facilitate that, I think the better off we will. I think also improving the security posture, not only of the U.S. government by putting resources and energy behind it, but really strengthening that cooperation between government and private industry. I think that's going to be a very good outcome of this. We've already seen improvements in that area, especially with our CISA organization and close ties to private industry, and a lot of cooperation around improving our techniques, technologies, and intelligence in that area. So overall, I think it's a great first step, but there's certainly more to do in that area.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think threat intelligence sharing is something we all try to foster as much as we can, but there is never enough of it in all industries, I guess. So Paul, are there any particular UK government initiatives we should pay attention to?
Yes. So I think, you know, again, we've been really sort of keen to use our sort of understanding of the threat as much as we can to share that and use it to have an active way of defending the UK as much as possible. So, you know, we have a range of services under our active cyber defence portfolio that have been looking to tackle some of that ransomware threat. So, for instance, we have a takedown service that effectively looks at taking down at scale, you know, many of the servers that are being used to target the UK, for instance. And I think that's sort of one initiative we've been also using. We run a protective DNS service for the whole of the public sector in the UK. And again, using that to try and stop a lot of the precursor attacks or part of the attacks. And I think, you know, so far, you know, really successfully. And I think it shows some, you know, basic cybersecurity measures can really have a significant impact in sort of reducing that harm. A lot of that information, again, is being shared with the private sector as well. So, you know, there's definitely, I think, again, you know, more collaboration. You know, Bob touched on it. I think some of those partnerships between government, law enforcement, industry are really important. But internationally, if you look at some of the work, again, on the back of the Colonial Pipeline attack, you know, you had discussions at the G7, you know, when that was in the UK last year. I mean, unheard of before, you know, having world leaders talk about ransomware. And I think that's really sort of shown that you can build really powerful coalitions to have an impact here. So, you know, sharing our knowledge across, you know, many different boundaries is definitely a key part of the defence to this threat.
Excellent, and it's certainly great to see that things are moving in the right direction. So, what steps can organizations at large take in order to stop an attack, and what should corporate governance around ransomware look like, and indeed any other best practice? To you, Bob.
Yeah, certainly. So I think there's been quite a lot of information that's made available by our respective companies and as well as industry around this. And generally, I think that the challenge with ransomware, as we touched on a little bit earlier, is that they are very opportunistic. So they don't choose to always come in the front door. They look for the lowest hanging fruit. So that means that one day it may be a zero day on a particular appliance or network appliance that's very prevalent. The next day it will be, you know, phishing credentials through some sort of email scheme. And then another day it may even be trying to recruit insiders by tempting them to help you launch an attack by offering them some of the ransom. So I think all of those things are such a moving target. For me, the baseline, the best way, the lowest common denominator is really around two bits. I think one is what you need to do is make sure that you have a business continuity plan on steroids, something that focuses on the threat of ransomware. So traditionally, BCPs really look at sort of a natural disaster, something that might happen in a single region or a single area. However, ransomware is indiscriminate. It follows the network and it follows your infrastructure. So you need to make sure that your ransomware plan covers has a very solid communication plan and assumes that you have absolutely zero corporate infrastructure. And that includes, you know, IP phones, emails, anything that you would normally do conduct business. you have to assume that's not going to be there. So really having a solid plan around how you're going to communicate and coordinate if an attack happens in your organization. And the second thing is really focusing on recovery. As we said, you know, the attack vectors always change, the technology changes, you know, the different points and areas where you may be secure one day might be insecure the next day. So the best thing you can do is really focus on recovery. Do all of the preparation that you can do to figure out how you can get back up to speed quickly and that you can get services and systems back online as fast as possible.
Thanks, Bob. So there's always something that's absolutely fascinating me, and you mentioned that earlier on in this chat, which is, you know, it's a question of economics, and criminals are making a lot of money. But the question of paying the ransom or not paying the ransom is a difficult one, because businesses that are victims are sometimes between a rock and a hard place, and indeed some jurisdictions have made the payment of ransoms illegal. So what's your advice on this, Paul?
So, I mean, the UK has a government has a very sort of clear position in terms of it certainly doesn't endorse or recommend the payment of ransomware, in these circumstances. I think ultimately that just fuels the ecosystem that we're sort of talking about. So, you know, we really do try to work with victims to avoid that. I very much understand, though, that many organizations do find themselves in really difficult circumstances. And so I think the sort of criminalizing of ransomware payments needs to be a very sensitively sort of considered, option, because really, ultimately, you risk penalizing the victim twice. And that's certainly not what we're trying to do here. So I think, you know, it's an area where public policy does have a role to play, potentially legislation does have a role to play, but it needs to be done in a thoughtful and sensitive way. So, as I say, you don't end up penalizing somebody who's already a victim.
Thanks, Paul. So we're rapidly running out of time on this fascinating topic. So what are the next 6 to 12 months likely to look like for ransomware, Bob?
Yeah, so I think Paul hit on a major point earlier, which is, you know, his recognition that some of these attacks may have been leveling off either through our success or due to geopolitical conditions. And I think that's playing a major influence with respect to what we're seeing. I don't think that necessarily changes their ability to be agile. I think that these groups that have created this technology have shown an amazing amount of very, very good digital competency and technical competency to be able to segregate their businesses, to build the technology, to scale it out, to run ransomware as a service, to essentially outsource the human component of it to other organizations to be able to launch the attacks while still being able to share the money. And I think that's still going to be prevalent. I think that they're going to continue to remain agile. I think they're continue to look for the lowest hanging fruit. However, there is this overhanging specter of the current world state and world conditions around a lot of countries and areas that are typically associated with sanctions, which is a big attraction for criminal gangs and for other actors that are looking to evade certain sanctions.
Thank you, Bob. And for you, what does it look like, Paul?
So I think, I mean, probably, you know, echoing some of what Bob has said as well, I think, so when we look at the threat over the next certainly 12 months, I mean, you have a sort of standard development of tradecraft by the criminal actors behind this. I think the increasing professionalization, if you like, that Bob alluded to, that, again, will continue to improve their tradecraft. So, you know, it's certainly something that I think will continue to be a significant threat. The thing that is really hard to predict, I think, is the geopolitical situation that we find ourselves in, and whether some of the criminals behind this see perhaps themselves under less threat of potentially judicial outcomes or retribution, and you know, potentially a willingness to be more bold in what they do, take more risks, perhaps go beyond areas where they've, you know, in the past, you know, drawn a line at doing ransomware against. You know, again, whether that's because they feel just purely that it will make more money, or even because they potentially see themselves aligned with certain political views or national views. So I think, you know, that would be the one thing that, you know, I think, you know, having this conversation in, you know, in another 12 months time, looking back, will be the thing that I hope we don't see, that sort of increase in relation to the world situation. Because I think that really potentially does change the dynamic of ransomware quite significantly. I think also, you know, potentially, you know, more state use of ransomware. You know, there's been a number of conversations around, you know, state actors moving into this space. And again, we just need to be sort of conscious that potentially is another dynamic that we need to keep monitoring.
Thank you, Paul and Bob. We could talk about this for so much longer, but we're nearly running out of time. So before I let you go, I'm going to ask each one of you for a final top tip for our audience with respect to ransomware. To you, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So I think the most important aspects of being prepared and understanding your exposure to ransomware is to realize that this is a real threat. It is very broad. There is no one way to describe it. There's no magic pill. There's no magic tool. There's no company you can pay that will prepare you 100% for this. So your best bet is to follow the best practices. Make sure you practice good cyber hygiene. But as I alluded to earlier, number one is make sure that you have a ransomware plan that includes especially a backbone of communication that doesn't rely upon any of your existing infrastructure, including key actors, as well as key communication mechanisms. And finally, the best way to circumvent a particular attack or extortion mechanism is to be able to recover. So make sure that you have your backups, make sure you have them detached, make sure that you're testing them, make sure that you have a way in which you can recognize how you can bring your business back up online in the most expedient and safest way possible.
Thank you, Bob. And Paul, what would be your final top tip?
So I think, I mean, Bob's laid out a perfect sort of set of things to do there. So I think the only thing I would say beyond that is exercise. I think, you know, really do everything you can to prepare, as Bob says, and work this through so that you know exactly what you need to do and how you're going to do it. I've worked with a lot of organizations that have had all of those components and done all those things that Bob talks about, but never actually, for instance, tested their backup or tested their response plan. So I think, you know, really do exercise that as well. There's a lot of tools out there. We, as the NCSC, run a free tool called Exercise in a Box, which has ransomware scenarios. And it's really important that organizations do test their plans and exercise for an event that hopefully they never have to face, but should certainly prepare for.
Thank you both Rob and Paul. Very wise words indeed. I'm afraid that's all we have time for. You have been listening to the Thales Security Sessions podcast. Today's episode was about ransomware, to pay or not to pay. I've had the privilege of hosting Bob Burns, Chief Product Security Officer at Thales, and Paul Chichester, Director of Operation at the UK National Cybersecurity Centre. Thank you for listening.
Love this episode of the Thales Security Sessions podcast? Search us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favourite podcast service to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to visit us at cpl.thalesgroup.com to access previous episodes, bringing you insights from industry experts on the latest cloud and data security news and trends. Thank you for listening.